Kunjabi Hare. Koti Jana Palapa Gravare Hare. Kope Jana Palapa Gravare Hare. Yashoda Nandana Vraja Jana Ranjana. Yashoda Nandana Vraja Jana Ranjana. Yamuna Tira Vanachari. Yamuna Tira Vanachari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabi Hari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabi Hari.
Jai Om Vishnupad, Paramahamsa Parvaj, Gacharya Satir, Siddhashri, Shimis Lion Grace, A.C. Bhakti Vedanta Swami Maharaj, Shri Prabhupada Ki Jai. ISKCON Founder Acharya, Shri Prabhupada Ki Jai. Samavid Bhakti Vrinda Ki Jai. All glories to assembled devotees, all glories to assembled devotees, all glories to assembled devotees, all glories to Shri Guru and Shri Gauranga. Mom Bishambaraya Krishna Bhastaya Bhutale Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Swamini Tanamane Namaste Saraswati Devam Gauravana Vicharana Nirvishesha Shunyavari Paskacha Deshikarana Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Thank you all for being here. I guess there's a lot of you here. I forgot my glasses, so I can barely see you, but it sounds like we had an audience here. Okay. I'm going to give a little prelude here, and then we're going to be reading from Bhagavad Gita, Chapter 18, verses 64 and 65, and I'm mostly be speaking about 65. I'm just thinking how as we're finishing up the Christmas season, which seems to drag on a while, and New Year's and through all the holidays and festivals, what it's really about, which of course I think most of the world, including most of the Christian population, often forgets. In fact, people always complain about this, where's the real spirit of Christmas and all of that? Because it's really celebrating the appearance of Jesus, and I guess if we would try to boil down his essential teachings, probably love would be the most central one that people would think of. I'm not a Christian scholar, and so anything I say may be right or wrong. So, but at any rate, I will quote from Matthew 22:35, when he was asked by a follower, what's the most important commandment? Jesus said, thou shalt love thy Lord thy God with all thy heart and with all thy soul and with all thy mind. This is the first and great commandment, and the second is like unto it, thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself. So, if we want to try to think about who is God, how do we love him? How do we serve him? How do we serve our fellow man? And basically, in Christianity, they generally say that one loves God by keeping his commandments, that we act in a certain way according to his rules and laws, and loving our fellow man. Now, in the Vedic scriptures, the Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam, we would certainly not disagree with this. These are good points, but I think that we find that the Vedic scriptures expand on these points somewhat. They give us more information on the nature of God, our relationship with him, and how do we really serve him and love him. It's one thing to say to love your fellow man. That's maybe not easy to do, but at least it's easy to conceive, right? Theoretically, it's fairly simple to understand about helping other people. But how does one actually serve God? And that's that is what Bhagavad Gita gets to. And especially as we look at the 18th chapter, the conclusion of it makes this very clear. And this knowledge is rarely found in religions throughout the world. It's very profound, it's very deep, and it's very confidential. Even Krishna calls it confidential. In the 9th chapter, in fact, is called confidential knowledge. And then again in the 18th chapter, it sort of picks up again to its conclusion. If we look over all of the organization of Bhagavad Gita, Prabhupada discusses that it's a systematic progression. In the early chapters, second, third chapter, is what's called confidential knowledge. It's nature of the soul, nature of the body, the difference between the body and the soul. And then we progress, seventh and eighth chapters are called the more confidential. And Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says that the middle six to 12, is sort of the essence of the philosophy. When we get to the 9th chapter and the 10th, Prabhupada says these are most confidential because they describe the process of pure devotional service. Throughout the earlier chapters, many different types of yoga, many different types of, you know, service or different practice, different sadhanas were described. Now, they're all connected with Krishna, and they all can be seen as bhakti, but they're a little less direct. When we get to this point, it becomes very direct. Krishna's speaking about devotional service to himself. And then when we get to the 18th chapter, this is the summary, and it's also the highest spiritual conclusion is given here. And so, in the, where am I? Well, I lost the verse to, do we have 1864? Can we get that? What's up there, 65? That's 64? I can't see a thing. Can someone read the English to it? The, oh, either way, yeah. 64.
Because you are my very dear friend, I'm speaking to you my supreme instruction, the most confidential knowledge of all. Hear this from me, for it is for you very.
Okay, thank you. And then it's the purport, if I have the right one. It says, the Lord has given Srila Prabhupada says, the Lord has given Arjuna knowledge that is confidential, which is knowledge of Brahman. And still more confidential knowledge of the super soul within everyone's heart. And now he's giving the most confidential part of knowledge, just surrender unto the supreme personality of Godhead. And the end of the 9th chapter, he says, man mana, just always think of me. The same instruction is repeated here to stress the essence of the teaching of the Bhagavad Gita. The essence is not understood by a common man, but by one who's actually very dear to Krishna, a pure devotee of Krishna. This is the most important instruction in all of the Vedic literature. What Krishna is saying in this connection is the most essential part of knowledge and should be carried out not only by Arjuna, but by all living entities. So, this is the build-up. This is the most confidential knowledge. So what is it? The next couple of verses describe that. So I want to read 65 in the full verse and purport. Do we have that up there? I'll just read it through. We can read along if you want. Manmana bhavamad bhakto madhyaji mam namaskaru mami vaishyasi satyam te pratijani priyosti te. By the way, does that verse remind you of any other verse in the Bhagavad Gita?
Ninth chapter.
Everyone says it. Last verse of the 9th chapter, right? First two lines are the same. Manmana bhavamad, you know, those two are the same and a little bit different. In fact, it's kind of interesting because by the time we get to the 18th chapter, the difference here is he's saying at the end, not just that I'll give you this knowledge or, you know, you come back. And he says, thus you will come to me without fail. I promise you this because you are my very dear friend. So now the personal relationship is becoming stressed even more as we get to the final summary of Bhagavad Gita. That's very important. So, translation. Always think of me and become my devotee. Worship me. Offer your homage unto me. Thus you will come to me without fail. I promise you this, because you are my very dear friend. Srila Prabhupada's purport. The most confidential part of knowledge is that one should become a pure devotee of Krishna. Always think of him and act for him. One should not become an official meditator. Life should be so molded that one will always have the chance to think of Krishna. One should always act in such a way that all of his daily activities are in connection with Krishna. He should arrange his life in such a way that throughout the 24 hours he cannot but think of Krishna. Now Srila Prabhupada tells us the result. of thinking of Krishna 24 hours a day. The Lord's promise is that anyone who is in such pure Krishna consciousness will certainly return to the abode of Krishna, where he will be engaged in the association of Krishna face to face. Now, that's quite a good promise, right? I mean, that's a very amazing. Krishna is promising us that Arjuna and any of us will come and be with him to his abode and engage in personal face-to-face realization and relationship with God. How do we qualify? How are we able to do that? Now he gives us Arjuna's qualification. Prabhupada says, this most confidential part of knowledge is spoken to Arjuna because he is the dear friend of Krishna. Everyone who follows the path of Arjuna can become a dear friend to Krishna and obtain the same perfection as Arjuna. These words stress that one should concentrate upon Krishna, the very form with two hands carrying a flute, the bluish boy with a beautiful face and peacock feathers in his hair. And if you have any trouble imagining that in your mind, you can simply look at our wonderful altar and see the most beautiful Shishi Radha Samasundara there on the center altar. And that's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. At least that's his deity representation, which is non-different. When we offer service to the deity on the altar, it's non-different. It's the same as offering service directly to Krishna, as Arjuna might do, face-to-face. These are descriptions of Krishna found in Brahma Samhita and other literatures. One should fix his mind on this original form of Godhead, Krishna. One should not even divert his attention to other forms of the Lord. The Lord has multiple forms, as Vishnu, Narayan, Ram, Brahma, etc. But a devotee should concentrate his mind on the form that was present before Arjuna. Concentration on the mind on the form of Krishna constitutes the most confidential part of knowledge and is disclosed to Arjuna because Arjuna is the most dear friend of Krishna's. So this is a very powerful purport, really. First, it's again reiterating what Krishna is telling over and over again in the Bhagavad Gita. He says, surrender unto me, Krishna, the form of Krishna, standing before you. Only by undivided devotional service can you see me as I am, as Krishna standing before you. So it's not some, you know, energy or some consciousness or some, you know, Brahman or some form. No, this is Krishna, the personal form of the Lord, who is the highest form, the original form of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Now, why doesn't everybody realize that Krishna is this supreme God? It depends upon different degrees of realization. To the degree that one surrenders, to the degree that one has realization of the different features and aspects of the supreme, those will become manifest to them. So Krishna manifests different aspects to different people, and that can be based upon their desires or their particular level of advancement. Now, Prabhupada says we should only worship the form of Krishna. Now, some devotees of the Lord may have different desires. We know even from Chaitanya Charitamrita, we had people like Anupam and Mari Gupta who were devotees of Ramachandra. You know, they were like, that was their, you know, their eternal relationship. That was their eternal form. They couldn't change that. They had that attraction. So Lord Chaitanya said, of course, well, that's fine. Well, that is your... But he also taught us that Krishna is that highest form because he is the one who is Bhagavan, who has all six opulences in full, who is all-powerful, all-beautiful, all-famous, all-knowledgeable, all-renounced, and all... What is the last one? Wealth? Strength. Did we say strength? Okay, strength, wealth. Okay, I was just testing. No, I forgot that one. So good, thank you. This is Krishna, and this is why we worship him. But it's not just because, oh yeah, he's the greatest, you know, he's better than everybody else, you know, my God's better than your God. No. It's because of the aspect of Krishna that is the sweetest, that is the most loving, who has the deepest, warmest, most loving reciprocation with his devotees, just like he is here with Arjuna. And we see in Srimad Bhagavatam his relationship with all the devotees in Vrindavan. So there are these three categories of realizations of Krishna. And the thing is, first understand of the different forms or different aspects or realizations of Krishna, they aren't wrong. They're all right. They're correct. But they maybe have different degrees of completeness. So, in the Srimad Bhagavatam 1.2.11, it talks about these three principal forms that Prabhupada mentioned in the purports that we read. Vedanti tat tattva vidas tattva yaj jnanamadvaya brahmatme paramatmatme bhagavan iti shabite. So the learned transcendentalists who know the absolute truth call this non-dual substance Brahman, Paramatma, or Bhagavan. So these are aspects of the truth, but not all have the same degree of completeness or full knowledge of God. But these three levels of Krishna is how he reveals himself according to his different features by different classes of people. So those who are fruitive workers, sometimes we call karmis, or people practicing karma yoga, they're seeking material gain up to the heavenly planets. So their realization of the Supreme may not extend past realization of the demigods, or the workings of material energy, or that there's some, you know, god or gods behind that. Then there's the jnanis, who are seeking liberation, getting out of this material world, freedom from the bondage of Maya, through knowledge, meditation, austerity. Now, the highest realization they can have is Brahman, the impersonal energy of the Lord. In other words, which is a form of Krishna. It's actually his spiritual rays that emanate from his body. From Krishna's body, his spiritual emanations are raised. They go everywhere, and they even are reflected into the material world through the sun. Surya is actually is Narayan, through the sun, and it can be experienced by people within the material world, especially those who meditate and have this conception. I'm not this body. I'm not this body. I'm spirit. I'm Brahman. I'm not matter. Right. So it's a more or less an intellectual process of understanding. Then the yogis, they tend to seek mystic power or knowledge of God within the heart if they're a little more advanced, and they can understand up to the level of Paramatma, the super soul within the heart. And Paramatma realization is more advanced because they're seeing Krishna, or at least the form of Krishna or Vishnu within the heart as the super soul, the source of all spiritual knowledge, so they're certainly more advanced. But now the devotees know Bhagavan. Bhagavan, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, complete in all opulences, a form that is completely spiritual. It's not a material form. There's nothing material about it. It contains all the other forms. Brahman and Paramatma are within it. And Bhagavan realization includes those, plus the understanding of the personal form of Krishna. And this pure and complete form is known by Krishna's devotees. It's a form, as I said, that is completely spiritual. Krishna can, any one of his senses or his bodily organs can do the activities of any other. There's no material limitation. Even when he appears in this material world and may assume the form of a human being, looks like a human being to people, he is not. He is completely the Supreme. It's described that actually a Krishna has three sizes. He has his gigantic size because, after all, he's everything. Krishna is the universe. Krishna is the spiritual world. He's the Vaikuntha planets. Krishna is all the material worlds, all the material energies. There is nothing that is not Krishna. But yet, it's not that Krishna becomes deplete. He just spreads himself all out. No, but he remains the complete whole, as the Upanishad tells us. So he has this gigantic form, and sometimes it's even thought of, sometimes our acharyas and Srila Prabhupada said this Bharata Rupa is somewhat of an imaginary form. And in other words, he doesn't really have this as an eternal form, but it's a way of conceiving, Krishna is the universal form, everything is within him. So he's the greatest, he's the biggest, and he's also the tiniest. Think of all the small, tiny little one-celled animals, then think of all the atoms that comprise, every single everything. Everything is both living and non-living. And within every single one of these atoms, who is there? Super soul, right? The super soul, Prabhupada says, goes within every atom and between every atom. So he's really the support of the entire creation as a super soul. But yet, he remains aloof. He never actually touches material energy. How does he do this? Comes back to what I always say, chinta shakti. It's his inconceivable power that he's able to do this, his inconceivable abilities, you know, that cannot fully be understood by our limited material mind and intelligence. But yet he does this. So he's the greatest and he's the smallest, but he has a middle size. What's his middle size? The human form that Krishna displays to us. If you were a resident 5,000 years ago of Vrindavan, India, where Krishna appeared, you would look like you were both human being sized. And that's the sweetest. Our acharyas have said that middle size is the sweetest size. You know, when Krishna appears as he is, almost as one of us. Not exactly as one of us, but almost appearing as though he was part of the human population. Even though he has supreme powers, which he sometimes displays and sometimes doesn't display, depending upon his inclination and depending upon the circumstance and depending upon the desire of his devotees. But at any rate, it's very difficult to know this form. This highest form is Krishna, as the friend of all living entities, as he says. Arjuna is his best, his greatest friend. Because we're conditioned in this material world. So in this material world, we tend to see everything, including our conception of God, through the lens of material conditioning. You know, it's probably something to say like our eyes are covered with cataracts, or the heart is covered with dust, or the eyes are covered with dust. It needs to be cleaned away so that we can see clearly and purely God and God's energies. So most people's vision is clouded. Clouded by what? The association of material energy, the three modes of nature, this matter that we live in. So this limited material vision and perspective may or may not reflect truth, or only a certain aspect of truth. Do the scientists know anything at all about anything? Well, of course they do. They have a certain slice of truth. But it has to do more with the interactions of material energies, right? How energy and matter act and interact and the laws that they have. All those laws, there are laws. Krishna makes all the laws, right? Everything is coming from him. But it's very limited. And some people have a little more expansive knowledge of there is a God, or a God in heaven, or Brahman, there's a spiritual energy that you can perceive somewhat. But we tend to be covered somewhat as long as we have either limitations in our consciousness and our attitude, our conduct, or most simply put, our degree of surrender to God. To the degree that we actually want to know God, to love God, and to serve God, he will reveal himself to us. So Krishna does guide us, because Krishna wants us to know him. Krishna wants us to come back to him. Srila Prabhupada said in a purport, "The Lord understands the mentality and sincerity of a particular living entity who is engaged in Krishna consciousness and gives him the intelligence to understand the science of Krishna in the association of devotees." So this is very hard to do by oneself. And that's why Prabhupada formed this society, this International Society of Krishna Consciousness, these temples, so that we could all learn from each other. We could learn from the society of devotees, and our association with other devotees that might be senior to us, who can help us to understand this philosophy. So how do we know Krishna? How do we enter the spiritual relationship? We can't just say, okay, Krishna, I've decided. Okay, I agree. Come and reveal yourself. I want to know you now. It doesn't quite work that way. In fact, in the Bhagavad Sandarbha, Jiva Goswami quotes Mukhata Upanishad, "The Lord reveals his form to the person who the Lord chooses." So only if Krishna chooses you is he going to reveal himself. Now, is this just arbitrary? He throws a dart on a dartboard and, you know, it hits your pictures? No, it's not arbitrary. Srila Prabhupada said, Krishna is fully realized by his pure devotees. And then going back to what Jiva Goswami was saying, he says, "Bhakti alone brings the Lord, and bhakti alone enables one to see him. By his sweet will, he reveals himself by his internal potency, being satisfied by the transcendental loving service of the devotee." Prabhupada actually quoted that in 4.3.23 purport. So, if we please Krishna through our loving service, as Arjuna did, then he reveals himself to us, and that's the process of receiving confidential knowledge. And so, Krishna imparts knowledge in many ways. Here, as we're reading Bhagavad Gita, he directly spoke. He personally gave knowledge to Arjuna. So sometimes he comes, he manifests himself or different incarnations to preach to the world in general or to his devotees specifically. He also leaves the revelation of his word through Shastra or scripture. When we read Bhagavad Gita or Srimad Bhagavatam, this is non-different than hearing directly from the Lord. These are his words. So we can know him by reading Bhagavad Gita. He also speaks through his devotees to glorify him and elucidate knowledge. As those, anyone who, of us who calls themselves devotees of Krishna, it's really our job. It's our service to him. It's what he desires from us to try to speak about him, glorify him, and to bring others back to him. Have others also understand Krishna and their relationship with him. And he also guides the sincere devotee from within through the super soul. The Paramatma is there within every one of us. And Krishna, my experience is that Krishna is speaking to us all the time. Most of the time I'm not listening. But if we ever tune in, sometimes we can actually experience God's guidance and direction to us. So he does the guide from within, from the Paramatma. This process of devotional service is the key. In 1154, Krishna says to Arjuna, "My dear Arjuna, only by undivided devotional service can I be understood as I am, standing before you, and thus can be seen directly. Only in this way can you enter into the mysteries of my understanding." So the process of being Krishna conscious and how we please Krishna. What is this process of bhakti, of serenity? It's kind of like, sometimes you feel like you're going around in a circle. Yes, we should do it, but what do you actually do? Krishna tells us in the verse we read today, "Always think of me, become my devotee. Worship me, offer your homage unto me. Thus you'll come to me without fail." It's really a matter of just serving Krishna, loving Krishna in a mood of love and devotion and service. It's a simple process, but not always so simple, because it takes sincerity and humility. And most of us in the material world, those are qualities that we find ourselves quite short of. To be really sincere, to be really humble, to really, Rochitani says, think oneself as, lower than the blade in the grass, more humble. It's like, that's difficult. More tolerant than the tree. Somebody insults you, offends you, you tolerate. Yeah, that's difficult. And to be truly humble, and not artificially humble, sometimes we hear these statements from the devotees. I was reading something by Rupa Goswami, and he was writing some beautiful prayers to Krishna and Radharani, and one of them he says something, I'm just paraphrasing, something like, "Even though I am the most wretched, and I'm the most terrible, and I'm evil and wicked, I just somehow pray you'll give your mercy to me anyway." This is Rupa Goswami, who's like a greatest Vaishnava who's ever touched this planet, somebody that we could just aspire to serve their lotus feet, And he's saying, "I'm evil," and I think, "Oh my God, what am I?" Rupa Goswami is saying. But when you think about it, it's really an expression of humility. Some of it is for us, for our benefit, so we can understand the proper attitude. But the fact that we're here in this material world, that we've left Krishna, all I have to do is think about that if I ever lack humility. In other words, what am I doing here, what in the world were we thinking that we somehow left Krishna at some time? And now here we find ourselves in the material world, and we are tiny, small atomic particles. There are billions and billions of living entities in this material world, and there are three times as many, approximately, in the spiritual world, in the tripad vibhuti compared to the ekapad vibhuti in the material world. So what is there not to be humble about? When we think that Krishna, not only has Krishna created everything, Krishna is everything. There's nothing that's separate from him. We are part and parcel of Krishna. So of course, some people take it the wrong way, and they, "Oh, I'm Krishna, I'm God too." Well, you have some of God's qualities, like you have this many, and God has, about stretched out a few thousand miles. In other words, we are tiny little particles. We are fortunate, we are blessed. The jiva, the spirit soul, has wonderful qualities because we have those same essential qualities as Satchit Ananda, eternity, knowledge, and bliss. That is our existence. That's who we are. And that is what Krishna is. So we have, of course, Krishna is full in all qualities, and we have a small portion of those. But, so we can be very humble, feeling very low compared to Krishna, and at the same time, there's a feeling that devotee has of not of being proud, not being proud, but feeling confidence, some confidence. We're rightly situated. It's kind of like, we have the most powerful father. What do I have to fear, right? The devotee feels fearless. The devotee feels confident. You know, it's not like, you know, I'm just so miserable and scraping along, I can't do anything. No. We take confidence and we work confidently for Krishna and for our spiritual master, because we know that Krishna is our maintainer. Krishna is, you know, is our protector. Krishna is our best friend, right? And Krishna, of course, says earlier in Bhagavad Gita that he's the supreme enjoyer, he is the supreme controller, and he is the supreme friend of all living entities. Prabhupada called that the peace formula, because it says in Bhagavad Gita, if everyone just needs to know those things, and we'd have peace in the world. God is the supreme controller. God is the supreme enjoyer of all of our sacrifice, of all of our endeavors should be directed towards him. And knowing that God is also the supreme friend. So we do not see God, Krishna, as some, you know, stern personality sitting on a throne ready to punish us. Material energy does a good job punishing us. You know, he doesn't have to worry about that. He delegates that to others. But Krishna wants us back to him. Krishna is our loving friend. So the perfection of the spiritual world, or in Goloka, Gokula, in this material world where Krishna exhibits his earthly pastimes, is that he demonstrates these perfect relationships. All of our material relationships are flawed to some respect. I think we all know that. We can all admit that. You know, we might have the best friend, we might have the best spouse, whatever, and we think they're wonderful. But let's face it, we're all flawed. In the spiritual world, nothing is flawed. Everything is perfect. So our primary purpose, though, is to reestablish that loving relationship with Krishna. Of course, when you think of Krishna, Prabhupada said, you never see a picture of Krishna alone. Krishna's with his cows, he's with the cowherd boys, he's with the gopis, he's with Mother Yashoda, or he's in Vaikuntha with all his devotees, he's in Dwarka with everybody there, with all, you know, Yashoda, and also with Devaki and that. Yep. So there's this exchange of love with devotees. So we not only just want to love Krishna, have a relationship with Krishna, and, you know, I don't care about any of the rest of you. You know, I'm having my relationship with Krishna. No, that's wrong. No, devotees are very very attached and very dependent upon what's called sadhu sangha, the association of the sadhus, of the sangha. And you are all the sadhus that we associate with. Those of you who are also Krishna Bhaktis. So that's very, very important. And there are loving relationships between devotees which are not based on the body. They're based upon devotion, based upon service. They're based upon spiritual qualities. And I was reading something very interesting that Jiva Goswami was saying in the Prita Sandarbha, that said, we love another Jiva because of what he called the preeti, which is basically bhakti, love, devotion, you know, affection towards Krishna, the preeti that we see in another living entity. In other words, their relationship with God, that love that they have, is attractive to us. It's not the personal relationship necessarily just by itself. It's like everything else. You take God out of it, and it's not very meaningful. We won't have a perfect relationship with another living entity unless God is in the center, unless Krishna is there. It's a fact, isn't it? When Krishna's there, then we have wonderful relationships. You know, like, you know, you can go to any temple anywhere in the world. I've experienced this. I used to travel a lot, don't anymore. But you go to another temple you've never been, and people don't even speak your language, but everyone kind of knows you come in, they're all doing arti, chanting Hare Krishna, and you feel affection for these devotees who you have nothing in common with, you've never met before. But the fact that Krishna's in the center and we're all celebrating this joyous process of bhakti yoga devotion centered around the chanting of the holy names. which is Lord Chaitanya's great gift to us, his great mercy of the Sankirtan Jagya. The path of most deepest mercy that Krishna came is Lord Chaitanya in the mood of Radharani. And Radharani represents, of course, compassion, Karuna. So Lord Chaitanya came, and all of his devotees came with him. All these gopis and coward boys and his parents and all that, they all came with him. They didn't, why would they want to come in this material world? They're eternal associates, you know? They're like, they've got their place of total bliss in the spiritual world. But they all came with him to help us, to help the fallen souls in this material world, to become attracted to Krishna and take up this wonderful, very simple process of simply hearing and chanting about Krishna. So through hearing, chanting, and remembering, after we hear and chant, all those material things start to go away, and our love for Krishna begins to develop. And as that love develops, it becomes deeper, it becomes more personal. We realize it's not some mechanical process, you know, chant Hare Krishna, you know, something's supposed to happen. No. You realize that those holy names are Krishna, and your love begins to deepen, and your relationship with the person Krishna develops. So this is a really wonderful thing. And I want to close with one last idea. One of the most remarkable things about Krishna's relationships to his devotees, who are totally dedicated to him, he is dedicated to them. He is dedicated to us, to you. Krishna frees everyone from bondage, but he is bound by his devotees' love. Verse 10, 9, 19 from the Srimad Bhagavatam. Maharaj Parikshit, this is Shukadev speaking, this entire universe with its great exalted demigods like Lord Shiva, Lord Brahma, Lord Indra is held under the control of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Yet, the Supreme Lord has one transcendental attribute. He comes under the control of his devotee. Krishna becomes so pleased by his devotee's service that he says, I will give you whatever you want. And Krishna devotee is thinking, I don't want anything except to serve you and love you. So this wonderful reciprocation develops with Krishna. Sometimes we might think that's some ways away or down the road, but don't think that too much. I mean, be humble, realize we're not there yet, but it's possible. It's within our grasp. We simply need to continue this process of bhakti that Srila Prabhupada has given us, which is completely in line with the process given by Rupa Goswami and all the acharyas, and we will come to this point. We will come to this point eventually, where Krishna says, just like to Arjuna, you are my dear friend. Okay. So, looking forward to that time. Oh, glorious to Srila Prabhupada. Namo Shiva Krishna Sangha Shimati Bhakti Gandhi Swami. I think it's probably officially time to let people go if you feel inclined, but if there are any questions, we could take a couple or comments. Yes, Prabhu.
Thank you, Prabhu, for the wonderful class.
Thank you. Wait for the microphone.
Hare Krishna. So, Prabhuji, just a little elaboration if you can give on the last point you mentioned that even though it seems like the destination is way ahead, but it will come, or, you know, staying there. But sometimes even devotees who've been practicing for 30, 40, 50 years, when you talk to them, they are like, you know, we are just starting, or, you know, the way they speak out of their humility.
Yeah. We always feel that way.
Yeah.
We're sadhakas. We're practicing. We're all practicing to get there someday. You know, because your practice can get better and stronger as you go along through time. One thing I like to say to people that, you know, I've been around 50 years or whatever doing this, and one thing I think that most of us could say is that our faith becomes stronger over time. You know, you do this for a long period of time, and Krishna gives you experiences that are faith building. You know, that you become very, very convinced of this philosophy and of Krishna's presence in our life. You know, so, I mean, even if we may be doing this for 50 years and I'm not seeing Krishna walking by me out on the veranda, no, but I have faith that someday that could happen.
But this seems like it's eternal.
What's that?
It seems like that kind of feeling.
Yeah.
Even Bhaktivinoda
Thakur. Bhaktivinoda Thakur is eternal associates.
Yeah.
But the poem that he wrote, I feel like the false pride is like my ornament. No. But then Prabhupada said, actually, he feels. It's not like a falsely...
Somehow he really feels that.
Feels that. Even though they're not in that category.
No, no.
But they have to express it. So but I guess it is
Bhaktivinoda has written so many nice poems and writings.
Yes.
And, well, you know, because you worked on Manushiksha. Well, Bhagavata speaks that way. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur is probably the most well-known purports, commentaries on him. They speak that way about false pride, about how important it is, you know, necessity for humility. Acharyas are constantly, not only explaining that, but they're taking that position themselves and showing by example how to be humble, right? It's a great point.
Very nice class.
Thank you.
I've actually wondered about that myself. For example, Lord Chaitanya says things like, even though he's Krishna himself, I have no attraction for the holy name.
Yeah.
And I was wondering if, because they also take material bodies, if they experience like what a true fallen conditioned soul experiences and allows themselves to like open up to that compassion, or if it's something somehow different?
Well, that's an interesting question. I think what you're saying is Lord Chaitanya or even other great devotees, do they sometimes feel those feelings like a conditioned soul? That's a hard one because my first instinctual response is probably no. I don't think it would be a material feeling or feeling like a conditioned soul necessarily, although I think there's some empathy for conditioned souls, some understand. In fact, do you want the long answer or the short answer?
The long one.
Okay. This is from Jiva Goswami in Bhaktisandarbha. He explains that Krishna, because he is perfect and has no contact with material energy, and Lord Chaitanya is Krishna, right? We have to start with that assumption, right? Krishna and Lord Chaitanya are non-different. You know, so he incarnated, he came as Lord Chaitanya. So, because they have no contact with material energy, you know, Krishna deputes all of this running the material world to the demigods and others, right, Maya Devi, etc. So he cannot actually feel the suffering of the living entities of the conditioned souls, although he understands it. He understands everything. He knows everything. He's in your heart. So he knows it and understands it, but he doesn't feel it. But this is one of the reasons why he deputes his devotees, who are, for the most part, not always, but for the most part, jivas, living entities, like us, who can, are a little closer, who can understand our situation a little bit more. And so often, we feel the mercy of Krishna first through the mercy of the devotee, right? The spiritual master, most specifically, right? And because they do have some sense or some compassion. Compassion is a quality of devotee. So compassion means that you have some understanding of the suffering of a conditioned soul, but not just have, but it's not like, oh, you feel so bad, yeah, I felt like that too. No, it's real compassion is spiritual love with the knowledge, the ability, and the willingness to try to help that person, know how to bring them out of that situation of suffering. So there has to be that compassion there. I can think of one other example of Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur mentioned in one of his 10th canto purports, which I can't remember which one it is now. But he talked about, it's a verse that talks about one who has been pricked by a needle. Somebody remember that one? You probably remember Pandit. He said, someone who is pricked by a needle can understand when someone else is pricked by a needle. In other words, by having that understanding, one can have some compassion or some feeling for another person because you have experienced that pain. So I would say the devotees generally are in that category that you don't have to experience a person's pain directly to be able to help them and have empathy, right? Okay, I was a psychologist. This is a fundamental rule of helping others in the counseling way. In other words, you don't have to experience everything to help another person and have empathy for that person, right? A person might be a schizophrenic, and I've never had schizophrenia in my life, so I can say, well, how do I know? No, but you still kind of get it. You kind of know what you can understand. That's a bad example. That one's harder to understand. But you know what I'm saying. But you can still help that person. So, in other words, as devotees, we may run into people in the material world who are doing all kinds of things we couldn't even imagine ourselves doing, right? But we could still have some sympathy or empathy or compassion for them because we're understanding their suffering. We understand that they are suffering and we have a solution, right? They may not believe it, they may not agree with it or accept it, but we do have a solution. You know, and it doesn't matter what the diagnosis is, what the condition is, it's the same, isn't it kind of like the same? We have a universal medicine. It's kind of like you went to the pharmacy and there's all these bottles on the shelf. And every single one of them is marked medicine. You think that's crazy. But what if they all said the holy name? You know, in other words, we have a universal solution for every problem. You know, and I'm kind of giving you a long version. I'm sorry. I'll stop, take a breath. Do you want to continue or is that enough?
Yeah, I'm just wondering. I guess my question was more like, why they, because Prabhupada says at least the acharyas do actually feel those feelings, and yet they're not true fallen conditioned souls. And so I guess it's more like how or why, but it could be inconceivable.
Okay. Yeah. Let's have some other, now I'm half blind. Is that Richard back there?
Yes.
Okay. Richard, you give us a shot at it. Give us your realizations.
I don't have much, but I was thinking one day about how, you know, Prabhupada says like a one dot of ink on a white sheet, mm-hmm. is so obvious.
Yeah.
But if it was on a black rug, you wouldn't even notice.
Mm-hmm.
And so I kind of feel like that a bit. The more dirty we are, you don't even notice. You can be very proud. Oh, I'm so great. You know, especially when you first join and you're first starting to, you know, what's that called? False. Yeah, the pure devotion. Yeah. You know.
There's actually a stage. It's
yes,
a Sanskrit term for it. That
really
sounds like, I can't remember all the technicalities, but yeah, it's there.
But as you become more and more purified, then those dirty things that are in there start becoming very magnified. You know, then you start really seeing. Oh my gosh, look at that! Look at that! You know, so I was thinking one day, that's how Bhaktivinoda can write songs like that, or how, you know, Sanatana Goswami can walk on the beach and burn his feet so that he doesn't have any of the Brahmins touch his horrible body, or, you know, because they're so pure that, you know, they can see any little bit of dust there as something. Anyway,
that's fine. I think that's true. I think I've even seen some examples of that the acharyas have given. And some things they'll say about, in other words, like, well, if I really love Krishna, how could I even stay alive here? I go, well, what? And, you know, it's like, to think that, you know, that's like almost inconceivable. But so, yeah, you're saying, taking some tiny little thing which we could hardly imagine. Yeah. That's a good point. Anyone else?
Srila Prabhupada wrote to Madhusudan Prabhu a letter in the Vedavesi, you can see, that he asked, did Bhaktivinoda Thakur actually monist in his early life? Was he impersonalist? How can he be impersonalist when he was intimate associate of Srimati Radharani in his eternal Swarup? So Srila Prabhupada gave an answer that he was put into this, just like Arjuna was put into this, to experience that.
Yeah.
Not that they are, but they do experience just like an impersonalist or bewildered like Arjuna experience.
Yeah, that's a very exceptional case, and that's a good point. In that,
yes.
Sometimes with the really great devotees, great associates, eternal associates like that, they're put in illusion. And we can see many examples of that where, you know, in fact, all the residents of Vrindavan to some degree are put in illusion, aren't they?
Yes.
So they don't understand Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead all
yes.
the time. So yeah, that will happen for different reasons as part of Krishna's pastimes. That what are some other examples? Well, of course, you said like Arjuna, he's covered over, like he says, how has this overcome you? And there's other situations like that where, how about Indra always trying to do terrible things, you know, when he tries to kill all the residents of Vrindavan, you know, with his thunderbolts and everything, and Krishna forgives him. Well, if this wasn't a pastime where he was covered in illusion to do that, I don't think Krishna would ever forgive him.
Yes.
Anyway, you get the idea. Anything else? Okay.
Thank you
very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.